All culture. I do this for my culture.
Black culture and hip-hop culture. It's Corners of the Culture. Corners of the Culture. With D-Lo and KC.
Let's go, baby. We in here. It's the latest edition of Corners of the Culture. I'm D-Lo. He's KC.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to jump. I thought you... See, the last episode, I was about to say, oh, it's the dope ones down is dope, but you slid right underneath me, so I was going to lay out let you hit us with the dope ones.
That's hilarious.
Don is dope,
by the way. It was good.
Yes.
We all here. We all here.
Yeah, we in here, baby, talking about one of my favorite things, man, the Notorious B.I.G. on the heels of 25 years celebrating life after death. First off, take care of the business, man. Thank you so much for downloading, subscribing, and for listening. We appreciate everybody who takes time to listen to this podcast. If you want to watch it, it's available in its video form over on YouTube. That posts every single Thursday, a little bit after the audio version posts. We appreciate everyone who's checked out D-Lo1KC.com as well as TheDopeOnes.com. Check out all of the great merchandise The Dope Ones has available for you again over at TheDopeOnes.com. Admittedly, as most people already know, if you've been caught up on this series after our Ready to Die episode, Notorious B.I.G. is probably my favorite artist ever.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, but I was going to ask.
He is. It's tough because he's been gone for so long. Like I love Jay-Z. So if I were to pick two, it's Big and Jay, and Kendrick Lamar is kind of right there on par with those guys. But I love Big. I listened to this Life After Death album with a different set of ears this time around. And I have some feelings on it. And I'm anxious to talk about it. But 25 years ago, just a couple weeks ago, this album dropped.
Crazy.
Of course, it dropped 16 days, I think, after.
After he passed.
Yeah, after the Notorious B.I.G. was murdered in Los Angeles. And, you know, of course, it's one of those albums that, because of the situation, it kind of takes on a life of its own. Hypnotized was already a smash by the time Biggie passed away. And there are just like listening to this album over the course of the last 10 days or so was such a reminder of like what a lyrical genius Notorious B.I.G. was.
Real quick, was Hypnotized debuted at the party?
I don't think it was debuted at the party. I think it was out.
Because I remember, this is what I remember. I was a young boy. So, you know, the excuse me if I wasn't on the official drop. But I remember I was in the Bay Area. I had a basketball tournament for my junior high school team. We were in Redwood City. That's what a tournament was. We were, I don't know, Santa Clara. It doesn't really matter. But I remember Saturday night on KMEL or 94.9. I don't remember. They played Hypnotize like three times. It's like, new Biggie Smalls, Justin, you won't hear it anywhere else. New Biggie Smalls. And me and my teammates, we was like, oh, this is kind of dope. Mm-hmm. Like, this is sick. And he kept saying, new Biggie Smalls, new Biggie Smalls. And the next morning, I went to Oakland after the tournament. And I remember turning on KML, and he had just been pronounced dead. And they were like, this has to stop, all this other stuff. So that's the only reason why I asked that. Like in the streets, maybe Hot 97, it was out for a couple of weeks. I don't know. But I remember that vividly. The DJ, like, new Biggie Small, played it like three times that Saturday. And then the next day.
It dropped 5 days before. Mm. That's when it was released. So 5 days in, you're still very much saying you're not going to get this anywhere else. You're still very much doing that radio speak. Hot new Biggie Small. Yeah. It's 5 days old. It's still very much new. But that was, if I recall correctly from everyone who talks about it, that was the vibe at the party, no pun intended, is Hypnotized was rocking like over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. The only record that I remember, like in my run where you'd go to a club and it would just play four, five, six times in a row was 50. When In the Club dropped, they would just mix it back in. It would just run. It was a 20-minute record in the club because they would just play it over and over and over again. But that's what Hypnotize was doing at the party. That's what Hypnotize was doing when it first dropped, because it had that. That was the record, I feel like, that they put out to show like, yo, Big's a star.
Absolutely.
Ready to Die was something different. Big, this record, Hypnotize, establishes, yo, Biggie Smalls is a massive star.
100%. And it was his first Billboard number one. ever in his career.
Damn, you would think he didn't get it with the other two, huh?
He got a rap number one, just Billboard, just pop 100. It was his first number one, Hypnotized. Wow. It catapulted him to another stratosphere. And then the video, like, come on, the video is just
every time iconic. I think of Big, the video, the like, video just, it's the it, that video me. Is what I always
drive it back within the bed.
But it's that shot where they're smiling and they're doing the on bob the from side to side, and it's like, man,
yeah.
What did he say on there? He was like, man, I don't care, I don't care. He said, I care. So he was like, I care. Stop throwing the money
on the boat, man.
But to your guys' point, you know, I'm big for like the moment and reaching the moment and answering the call. And after the success of Ready to Die and who he was as a new artist, man, that first single off the second album is always.
It's always tough.
It's always like, ooh, can you live up to it?
Mm-hmm.
Not only did he live up to it, he exceeded it. Absolutely. Hypnotized from the first moment I heard it and everybody around me heard it. This is a smash.
Yeah.
This track is fire. Yeah. He did it. He absolutely did it. Is that the one? I don't think it is, but the urban legend has it. I think it was in the movie, but I think Puffy talked about it or whatever. But I think it was Hypnotized where they're playing it in the studio. They're playing it, and he just sits back and he says, "I'm the greatest. I'm the greatest. I did it. I'm the greatest." I think it was. I know it was in the movie, but I think Puffy talked about that moment too in real life.
So if it's in the movie, it wasn't Hypnotized. Mm. It was 10 Crack Commandments.
And now I was going to say that it's 10 Crack Commandments. He did it with Preem, and it was the last song recorded on the album.
Yeah.
And he's like, "We did it, Preem. We did it."
And that's the record where he goes, "I'm
that's my favorite song on the album, by the way. We'll talk about that later, though.
10 Crack Commandments. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
I've been trying to decide what my favorite. I think I know what it is. I'm quite positive. We should probably talk about that because. The album was recorded over 2 years, from 95 to 97. I think it's September 95 to early 1997. And you talk about your favorite records. The one I play the most is Long Kiss Goodnight.
Mm.
I think Long Kiss Goodnight is my favorite record on there.
Yeah, I love the hook.
And the belief has always been that that record is about Pac. Now, Lil C's, who was there, was like, "Yeah, the record is about Pac." There's a whole intro to that song that was cut out and burned and tossed because Puffy didn't want anybody to hear it. Mm-hmm. Puff says, "Nah, that's just some MC shit. It's not real."
Mm-hmm.
My belief is that record is absolutely about Tupac, but it was recorded before Pac was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And so either they scrapped the whole beginning or Puff didn't, either they scrapped the beginning because he died or Puff was never going to allow whatever that interlude that C's talks about when he talks about this record.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just too much in that song.
Yeah.
That's like,
it can't be about Pac.
That's about Pac. Yeah. Like, come on, man.
And it makes sense because the album was recorded at the height of the beef. So, you know, who shot you? If that wasn't a big enough, you know, jab at Pac, he needed something else.
But Who Shot You came out before that stuff started.
It did. Did it?
That, oh like, yeah, Who Shot You was out, oh, that was Mary J.
After he got shot in the studio.
Like associated with it, and eventually it came to right. It was before all of that. But it like just eventually became associated with the beef. Like
Who Shot You was the spark.
Yeah, exactly.
Who Shot You was the one that, you know, Pac was doing the Vibe magazine interviews,
mm-hmm.
talking about he's out here making records about me because he caught, you know, I was going to the studio like he was there. Y'all didn't see nothing.
Right.
That was
which in hindsight. Line. I don't think Biggie had nothing to do with
I don't either.
But Who Shot You?
It makes
you
sense
probably shouldn't have.
Right.
Put that out.
It makes sense for him to like try to draw those conclusions.
Yeah, like, and he said, "I'm Pac." Like that makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then he said, when he was in Rikers, people were like, pumping him up with that. Like, you know, Biggie set you up, right? And here's the song to prove it. You know. So. Yeah.
And once again, I don't think Biggie had anything.
Nah, I don't either. I think it was coincidental.
Hell, he almost got shot. Didn't like him and C's almost got caught in the crossfire.
C's almost
nah, got they was yeah,
they were coming down.
Big was upstairs. Big C's was coming C's down. Was coming
down. That's yeah. right, because they told C's to go get right.
the elevator up. Opened,
right?
And the dudes was still there, and they basically just told him. That's why, like, Pac knows who shot him, mm-hmm. and he knows it wasn't. Like, I always looked at that. Like, Pac, I think, is a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he saw a chance to make money with Big, and he wasn't going to go at the people who really shot him. He went at him later on the Machiavelli album,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think he wasn't going to go at he wasn't going to make any money talking about the people who shot him. He's probably going to end up dead if he talked about the people mm-hmm. who shot him at Quad City Studios. But when Who Shot You dropped, Who Shot You had been recorded like that had been on wax for I think it was a Mary J. B-side or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was part of a remix thing that back in the days of maxi singles where you'd get like five or six different songs on a maxi single.
Yeah.
But Long Kiss Goodnight, I think, is my favorite record. Favorite? And the list is long, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's also a list of records I have that I didn't think aged well, but we'll get to that. Go ahead.
I don't know what my favorite song is because I love Tin Cockerance. I love Long Kiss. I love Hypnotize. I love More Money, More Problems. I love Going Back to Cali. I love the collab that we probably can't even talk about. That might be the song.
I'm going to be honest with everybody. I did not skip that record in my research.
You can't. That song is one of the best, probably top three on the album. You can't skip it.
Yeah, I did.
But Kenny, you got to pick one, though.
If I had to pick one. If I had to pick one, I'd probably go with, you know, I like the hits, man. I'd probably go with Hypnotize. Hypnotize is the one.
Man, none of us have mentioned what I think is the hardest lyrical record on the album, too, and that's Kicking What's Beef.
Door? Oh, What's Beef? Crazy. Kicking the Door is also one of my
favorite. We talk about this all the time. If you trim the fat on this album, it's the greatest hip hop album of all time. Mm. But 24 tracks, it's
what's
not.
What's the fat?
There's only like three.
So
I want to see what you got.
I feel like I could make the record timeless. Because here's I told Don as we were walking in, it's like, yeah, I noticed something about this album on my way in today. Mm-hmm. I don't love the second disc.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
So look, I'm not starting anything. High Notorious takes. Thugs, I listen to for a verse Fire. And then well, I turn it
okay.
off.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're not alone.
I understand why he made Miss You.
Right? Miss You doesn't need to be on there. If you have Scott,
but I understand why he did it.
It does. I think
but I understand why
place,
he
though.
Did it.
I think Miss You was in the wrong spot.
Going back to Cal, you got the verses are dope, but the chorus does, like the Lil' Kim track doesn't hold up for me.
I actually like that song, but I understand it doesn't.
It doesn't hold up. Yeah.
But once again, so here's my thought, and I understand what you're saying, but you don't need Missing You and Sky's the Limit and another one and Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you don't need. They're damn near the same song
to me.
Like the two, you know.
Yeah.
Missing You and Sky's the Limit is almost the same song. Another one and Nasty Boy, like. Damn near the same song. You don't need them both.
Just similar vibes, you right? Mean, right.
Yeah. I'm fine keeping Notorious Thugs. Like I get it. It's important to the record. Going Back to Cali, and then I think I'll skip all the way to the last three tracks.
Oh,
with
see.
My Downfall, Long Kiss Goodnight, and You're Nobody Till Somebody
what?
Kills.
So you're including Sky's the Limit in that, right?
Sky's the Limit. But so here's. Sky's the Limit's a great keep your head up record, right? That's kind of it's a good song,
mm-hmm.
but in 2023, I'm probably not listening to it.
Mm. The world is filled.
It's cool.
Classic.
Classic. That song is filled is classic.
Bro. Absolutely. With Too Short on it.
No telling when I fucking will I diss him.
It's cool.
It's so classic. Jay had to bite the whole verse. It's, you know what I'm saying? Like, he had to bite that whole
it's
verse.
Cool.
The world is
like,
real.
I'm okay. You could lead that into, I
did
guess,
you did you say, did you say My Downfall? You skipped that?
No, that's the last three tracks. Okay. Yeah, My Downfall. We could start with The World is Filled if you want, but Long Kiss and You're Nobody.
Nobody.
Till Somebody Kills.
You think Your Nobody needs to be on there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
I mean, I love it. I love it.
That's the perfect end of the album.
Yeah, I love
it. It's like Suicidal Thoughts. It's the perfect end of the album.
I'm just checking. But Playa just, Hater doesn't need to be on there either.
Nah, it's like a cute bit. See, the B.I.G. interlude is a tribute to
yeah, like
was
that.
A PSK.
Like,
it's dope. It doesn't take up a lot of time. It's not that big of a deal. But
B.I.G. is kicking his screen.
Yeah, I just I was just like on the second as I knew we were on the second disc, I was like, I'm not really gonna bump this shoe. Like, I'm cool. Yeah, and then I listened to another and was like,
like I said, I actually like that track more.
The verses are dope.
Yeah.
But it's like, what do you do when your bitch is on? It's like
that. Man. The way he wrote for Kim on that and like had the back and forth, I enjoy it, but I understand how people are like, that don't need to be on there.
Yeah, it's definitely, highlighting Kim and their relationship, business and otherwise, but it was like necessary for him to put that on there. I feel like, but I gotta ride hard for the second disc though. Gotta go hard for the second disc, Damien.
Okay,
a little bit of blasphemy going on in here today.
Damien's hodding today.
Come on, man. First of all, 10 Crack Commandments.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah, my bad. I thought that was on the first one. No, yeah, 10 see, Crack Commandments. That's
why I just got hyped.
That's the giveaway. Well, I just said that's the record that made him the greatest. But I thought that was on the
first. Let's be clear. I have never had any ambitions to sell crack in my life, but that song, I don't know of any song that gives more game than 10 Crack Commandments.
I feel like I can do it.
That can be applied so many different things.
You know who it was made for? You know who the beat was made for?
I remember hearing this, but I don't actually.
Angie Martinez.
Really?
It was made for Angie Martinez. Right. It was made for her.
For the intro for her song. That's right. I did know that.
Yeah. Yep. It was made for, what was it? The Hot Five? Yeah. Five, top yeah, five, yeah, five or whatever.
Yeah. To, yep.
Yeah. That's, it was made for her.
Wasn't that the song? Oh, wasn't that the song Big wasn't feeling at first?
10 Crack Commandments?
The beat. Somebody brought him a beat and he wasn't feeling it. And I remember, it's not this. It's something with I think he said an Isaac Hayes sample. Maybe it's not this one. But he wasn't feeling it at first. And then he went back. It's one.
Yeah, I don't think it's 10 Crack Commandments, but that song at 13, that song was everything.
I feel like that's something from Ready to Die.
Maybe yeah, I think it is.
Maybe it was.
Yeah, because I feel like we had this discussion on Ready to Die where there was a record that he wasn't.
I wish I could have been here for that conversation.
Are we running back? Like we could do it again. Like Ready to Die is good. Ready to Die, just like Life After Death, just like All Eyes on Me, just like Illmatic, like they're good for more than one podcast. Absolutely. Like we could talk about those podcasts we could talk about those albums on multiple podcasts. Obviously this album's loaded with hit records, arguably some of his biggest. When you talk More Money, More Problems, Hypnotize, it's just one of those what ifs things. It would have been incredible to see where this took big, because Ready to Die got him to the point where, okay, I get this. I'm going to be a massive star with this second album. And Hypnotize, More Money, More Problems, those big crossover pop type records. It's always just incredible to think, like, where would Life After Death have taken Biggie? What would have been next this?
Well, you know, he had the three, right? So he had Ready to Die, Life After Death, then Born Again as a trilogy. Like, Born Again wasn't just something created after he died. Like, he had that title already.
Yeah.
So it was like a trilogy already, right? Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about Life After Death that I didn't know, I knew he got in a car accident, right? Lil C's, he got in a car accident. He was, limping around for a while. But what
which reminds me, I think Notorious was for this album.
You think Notorious was for
the song Notorious?
Oh, okay.
I think album. Okay. Yeah, they didn't use it, and it wound up being the lead for Born Again.
On Born Again.
That's listen to the lyrics too. The timeline matches up perfectly.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I'm in about 3 weeks of recovery. All the nurses is loving me. Yeah. It matches up. I think it was for this album.
But what I didn't know. And that song is a classic. It makes sense if it would be on there. But like, Big actually took like 6 months off. Like, he had no inspiration. Like, he had writer's block. He didn't want to get in the studio. He was getting in trouble. I think he got in a legal situation. And, Puff was like, come on, man. we could fuck this up. Like, you know, you ride high off the success of, you know, Ready to Die and Junior Mafia, but this could all go away. Like, you need to get with it. Yeah. And Big just wasn't, like, he just wasn't motivated. So
I heard Big, like, he, because people always look for Big records, like, why aren't these lost verses? He looked at this stuff as work.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
in the studio and stuff.
Yeah, like when he was in the studio, that's when he was working. But he wasn't at the house holding his daughter writing a rhyme.
Right,
like
right.
That's not how his mind operated.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. So when it's funny you say that, because that was a part of it almost became like a chore, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To go to the studio to make records, you know what I mean? So what Puff did was he left and went on this famous trip to Trinidad, where he made like all these incredible records. Mm-hmm. He made like Mace's whole album and Kim's whole album and the Puff Daddy and the Family album. You know what I'm saying? And Big was just back, you know, in Brooklyn, just bullshitting. I mean, he was married at this point, I think, him and Faith were together. But it wasn't until Puff came back with all these records and Big was like, oh shit, like you really put in work. Like, okay, let me get back on my shit. Yeah. And that's when they went back in. I'm not sure what had been recorded already, but in the height of the East Coast, West Coast shit and Puff going off to do his own thing, I think it was like a wake up call for Big. Like, okay, I got to really get on my shit. Mm-hmm. And I think that sense of urgency was there and ended up becoming a, you know, two disc album.
Big was almost like how we talk about some of these basketball players, like Ben Simmons. Like, he's like, I'm good enough to do, like, I'm talented enough.
Right.
To make millions of dollars. I don't really love this shit like that. Like, I really like it.
Right.
I don't eat, breathe, and sleep.
The passion.
I'm just really
there.
Good at it. And like, if I'm this good and could be a multimillionaire, like, how do I not do it? But
right,
you know, like he was big. He just he enjoyed his time away from music, it seemed like. Like, you know,
definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely did. And it's why we only get like a smattering of like, oh, this is a big verse. I haven't, like, Jeans and Sneakers. Like, if you scour the internet enough, you'll find a handful of them, mm-hmm. but you ain't going to find very many.
You ain't going to find too many. They are like hidden gems. Like, there's one, there's a freestyle.
Which is why he does the same freestyle over. They say Biggie's freestyling and he does I got the 7 Mac 11s about 8:38. It's like, wait a minute. How many times did he freestyle that joint?
No, but there's a freestyle. There's a Funk Flex. It was a Funk Flex mixtape that came out between Ready to Die, I believe, and Life After Death, where he's on there with the Lox. This was kind of like the Lox's introduction when they were on Bad Boy. And Big spits that line where he says, I got stripes in New York like Yankee uniforms. Oh, my God. You know what I'm talking about? You ever heard that?
I think I have.
Heard. And it's like those little gems, like those little, you know, just gems that Big gave us. It's like, damn, you know, I wish he did love it, you know, because we probably would have got a lot more of those. But he was so just like, you know, he was a fucking genius.
Let me ask you guys, man, and because you saying that, what makes Biggie great in your eyes? To me, it's his, with like his lyrics, it's his timing. He doesn't really say anything like, he's not like Nas. Mm-hmm. With his words,
yeah,
because he may say, I got the cat and the hat in the back of the jet, like he may say that, but it's just,
I make your mouthpiece obese like Della Reese.
Like his wit and his timing of the way he put the word, it's hard to explain, but I think you guys understand what I'm saying. It was perfect.
Yeah,
it was perfect. It doesn't matter if he was saying cat and hat, the way and the time he said cat and hat was
what you think, Danny?
Nah, I disagree a little bit. Like, I agree with your overall point. His delivery is one of the things that makes him legendary. But I do think he has lyrics. Like, I don't think he's out there like saying nothing. Just a lot of times what he's saying, especially on this album, that's another thing that stood out to me. What's Beef, 10 Crack Commandment, Mind Down, all them joints. Some of this shit is dark. Yeah, some of this shit is
half the album is dark.
Yeah, like, yo, fuck them in they ass, throw them over the bridge. Like, oh, God damn, Big. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he has the ability, I think, to deliver those. Like, man, it's tough with two albums and some freestyle. I think Big might be the greatest lyricist ever.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
no, exactly. I do.
Jay-Z
I do.
And Nas rhyme.
It's not the
in
same.
A different way.
It's not it's the
so
same.
So here's my take. So I don't think Big is the greatest lyricist ever, but I do think he has the best flow ever.
Mm.
And I think a part of the reason why he has the best flow is just, number one, just rhyming came naturally to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been doing it for a long time. So like all his old friends, D-Rock, all the guys he used to hustle with, they would say when Big was on the block, he would just be out there rhyming. This is way before the deal, way before Puff.
Mm-hmm.
He would just be out there rhyming, and he would just kick some shit to his boys, like, yo, what you think of this? Da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then the famous freestyle battle in front of the bodega.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It's me, the B.I.G. Mm-hmm. Conference ever since 13. So he always had it in him, right? But there's an interesting story about where the flow was perfected, because Big's neighbor was a relatively well-known jazz musician
mm-hmm.
by the name of Donald Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy saw the talent in Big early.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he was kind of grooming Big to be a jazz musician.
Mm.
And obviously that wasn't going to happen. Big wasn't going to be no trumpet player, but he kind of, I guess, adopted that staccato sort of jazz flow. Mm. And implemented it in his rhyme style. So when you hear him flow, you know,
that scat sound,
yeah. You know,
that makes a lot
that
of sense.
Cadence, that's where that came from. Wow. And that's what attributes to his flow being, you know, unlike anybody else's, I think.
That makes a lot of sense. What you said, Damien, as far as him being the best lyricist of all time. Yeah, I mean, I could absolutely see it. I could absolutely see it. Like, it's just, to me, it's like all things combined. It is so, yeah. It's so flawless.
Ten Crack yeah. Commandments is like a verse. It's just like it's like God did before Jay did it. Like, it's just a long verse in which he's laying all this out.
Right? Yeah.
And he woves everything together in the way he delivers it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to change my perception on this too. Like I just think there's a couple of tracks that get in my way, and it's really Miss You and Another that are just like glaring out.
Miss
like,
You does take the vibe down. Like it doesn't
following
flow right.
Notorious Thugs.
It don't
work.
Flow right. They messed that.
And like, too, when you talk about like you feel like he had to have it on, that was like obviously dedicated to somebody.
Yeah,
so, yeah, you know, that's dedicated right. To
that's
a man.
Why it was
right.
On. That's why
yeah.
Like. Yeah. Sky's Limit wasn't. Sky's Limit was like a Puffy record.
Right.
I was like, all right, Puff, I'll give you Sky's Limit, but we're not taking off Miss You. This is for my man.
Yeah.
We got to get Justin Tinsley on the show. He wrote It Was All a Dream that came out maybe a year ago. He writes for Anscape, but it's one of the, you know, the Unbelievable is a really good big book, but I think It Was All a Dream is better. Like it's a little more concise too, but I think that book is incredible. We got to get Justin Tinsley on the show because he talked about what losing O meant to Big, and how you talk about that writer's block, that loss of ambition. A lot of that had to do with him dying,
because that
shut him down when it happened,
because he was instrumental in Big's life,
everything,
because he was like the guy, he was one of the guys who introduced him to the game, but immediately saw how talented Big was and was like, okay, I'm gonna do everything to help you get on.
Mm-hmm.
So he was putting up the money for studio time when he was doing demos and just, you know, just kind of like his main like benefactor. He was just backing him with everything. And yeah, it was a huge loss when he lost his man.
Let me ask you guys a question. How much credit does Puff get for this album? Because this seems like Puffy's fingerprints are all over it. And it was like the classic push and pull between Puff and Big. And Big was like, I want to make Somebody's Gotta Die. And Puff was like, all right, well, we got to make more money, more problems too.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, like, if it feels like, I could be wrong, but it feels like that happened all throughout the album. Like, I want to make 10 Crack Commandments. All right, well, give me Sky's the Limit.
Yeah.
And it works, right? Like people, look at Puff and they're like, oh, you know, brings in the, you know, the pop side of it all. But shit, that was star making stuff.
Absolutely.
Like it wasn't, you went from being just a really dope rapper to a mega star.
No, facts.
Because of what Puff, how much credit you think Puff gets for this?
I mean, I think he gets the credit. I think he gets a lot of credit, number one, but mostly the credit for like polishing up, you know, a gem that he found in the hood. You
he was the saying? Maestro behind
he was this. Absolutely the maestro. Yeah. And he saw Big didn't even see his full potential. Mm. Puff did. And I think there was genuine love. I know there was genuine love between them. There had to be. Mm. You know, I know there was, but I do feel you on like him pulling him to the like the pop side, more or less, you know, the commercial side of it, because Big did want to stay gutter. He did want to stay dark. He did want to stay street. But
there was a turning point that I think it registered with him. Funny note, Diddy produced every record you think he produced, with the exception of Sky's the Limit. Clark can't produce that one, but every record in your head you're thinking, you know, I bet Puff did that one.
He did.
And probably a few you don't think too, because I think he did Somebody's Gotta Die. He did You're Nobody Till Somebody Kills You. But I think Big had a moment between, because it was between Ready to Die and Life After Death. Like I think we talked about on Ready to Die how you talk about the push and pull. That was Juicy.
Yeah.
Big was like, all right, dude, like whatever. Then they did the One More Chance remix, and lost in all of the lore of Ready to Die. Technically, the biggest song off of that record, even though it wasn't on the record, was One More Chance.
I feel like that's when I got introduced to Big.
I think that's the moment where Big was like, oh, okay.
Right.
Because Juicy was big, but it was still hip-hop big. Big Papa was big. It had a little bit more crossover. One More Chance, that was a smash.
Commercial.
Yeah, that was a smash everywhere.
Did we look it up? That was the biggest selling single, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we looked that up on that.
On Ready to Die.
Yeah. The amount, it's crazy. I mean, I know everything is measured on downloads now, but looking back at how many records One More Chance, the single, sold was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal.
Which actually makes me think a little bit later, how many records did Hypnotize sell? Let's see if I can find this quick enough.
That'll be up there.
Rap Hypnotize.
Okay. United States. Okay, maybe not as many as I thought. Any guesses?
4 million.
Ooh.
1.2.
But remember though, we're 97. We're starting to we're not quite where we were when One More Chance, Juicy, all those
came out. I'll make this prediction right now. I think More Money, More Problems sell more.
Okay.
The Hypnotize?
Yeah. More Money, More Problems.
All I know is Puff loved Diana Ross. Puff absolutely loved Diana Ross. 1.3 in the United States.
And Hypnotize 1.5?
1.2.
More Money, More Problems. That was so it was, you know, after he passed or whatever, and it was the second single. And now I remember that was all summer. All summer. MTV Jams, the countdown every single day, the top 10 videos. All summer long, number one was More Money, More Problems. All summer. That's how I figured it was pretty big. It's just... Yeah. That whole summer of 97 or whatever.
I gotta look up one more single. Oh, they're not gonna give me the numbers for it, because there was another song that was number one that whole summer. Oh, there it is. Yeah, and it's not even close. Nah.
Scream.
Hey, don't laugh. Don't tell those jokes.
There.
I don't like how you laughed at that. You need to calm down. You need to calm down over there.
Scream was there. I used to see Scream every day on the countdown.
That's funny.
What's on?
I'll Be Missing You.
Oh
my really? Goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
3.1. Yeah.
That song was everywhere.
3.1. Three times platinum here. Three times platinum in the United Kingdom. Three times platinum in Sweden. Three times platinum in Germany. Four times platinum in Belgium. Two times platinum in Australia.
That song was,
and you know, everywhere. What's crazy about that too? I can remember back then, you know, people saying, oh, yeah, you know, Puff has something to do with Big Dying because, you know, missing you hit so big. And he became like a star in his own right after that, you know, on the heels of that whole thing.
It's crazy.
And yeah, it was just, man, that was a real dark time, dude. Because when Ready to Die came out, the reason why this album means so much to me, my grandmother died the same year. My grandmother died in May of 97. Big died March 9th. And I just remember Ready to Die was like, I mean, Life After Death, rather, I'm sorry, was the first album I really like lived with. Like every single track, like internalized it, you know, like every single song, like it was like an escape for me. Like it was just took me somewhere and I took something from every song. And it was kind of like an escape from what was just going on in a day to day kind of situation. Like I was close with my grandma and, you know, I just watched her kind of deteriorate. And, you know, here's this album that I love, but Big's gone too. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was just a crazy time. You know what I mean? But the impact that this album had and its staying power and, you know, 25 years later, it's just timeless. You know what I mean? And I think going back to your question about Puff, you know, Puff was instrumental in like, okay, hits are hits, right? But some hits just have just that timeless appeal. You know what I mean? Like all the hits on these records, they're forever. Like Hypnotize is forever. As many times as we heard it back then, you could still run it back today and it still has the same energy and feel just as good.
You still
vibe to the shit, right? And that I gotta give Puff the credit for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those songs last forever.
Yeah.
You know, they last forever. Another question for you guys. Did Big not do a whole lot of interviews? Because I remember the 94.9 interview and then the one that's on the end of this first disc with it ended up being a Rap City interview.
With Joe Clear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's it. That and then on the Mo Money Mo Problems when he was clearly out of shape and out of breath and was like just waking up.
He's in the SUV.
Paranoid.
Yeah.
And it feels like I'm looking back and it's like, damn, did he do a lot of interviews?
Well, I don't think there were the same outlets for interviews. Like that's what you had. Yeah. Like most radio interviews weren't saved and filmed and different things like that. And the Rap City ones and, you know, the one where he's I think it's Rap City, but where he's talking about Pac.
That's the one on the basketball court.
Yeah. It was like, that shit fucked me up. Like that one. Yeah.
The orange and blue Kanashi.
Yeah. That one. I just don't think they're as readily available 25 years ago as, you know, they are today.
I only asked because it felt like Pac was all.
I was about to say that. Pac had so many interviews, though. Like, he was on Rap City, he was on Teen Summit. He would have
these random ones.
He was on like Video Soul. Yeah,
he was in a hotel lobby with the beanie and the black.
Yeah,
he was in jail. Did an interview in jail. Like Bob was
the
doing
interview at the gun range. Like he was doing shit everywhere. No, that's a good point though. Pac was
Big,
everywhere,
but it didn't feel like Big.
Big didn't seek the Pac interviews. Sought the camera out though. Yeah, Pac loved that.
That's
stuff.
That's true.
I don't think Big did.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely don't think Big wanted to be famous. I just think he wanted to be rich.
Mm.
I think he wanted the money and the security. I don't think he wanted the fame that came with it.
Mm.
Like you talk about the SUV interview. I think that shit is real. Mm. Like the beginning of My Downfall. Yeah, that shit is real.
Yeah,
definitely. Talking, yeah, those calls that he's getting. Like, I don't think he wanted that. I just think he wanted the money that came with it.
Yeah.
And he saw this all as building a better life for his mom, his family, that and that whole deal.
Yeah. Cause even when, you know, they were shopping his demo tapes around.
Pac wanted the fame. That's why, like that's why it's different.
Yeah, definitely. And Pac was just more, I don't want to say he was a performer, but he was.
He was. He was a performer. Yeah, dude was an actor.
He absolutely was. And
he was on a different world. We watched him like 2 weeks ago.
It's a fact. But I mean, Big was on Martin, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he was on Martin as Big.
True.
Like, Pac wasn't Pac. Pac
he was.
A, he was just Piccolo.
Well, that's a,
he was but Pac, he still,
but he was Piccolo.
He still acted, though. He still
but
acted.
But no, definitely.
The campus fighting.
But I think, yeah, like when, you know, you make that comparison, it does sort of give insight into the fact that Big was definitely more, you know, he just let the music speak for him, I feel like, you know. But I don't think he really knew how massive a star he was or could be, you know, because I could totally see, like, after that Martin episode, I could totally see Big doing movies or, you know, doing more, you know, TV or just being out there more. Yeah. But he never really was. Like, I literally, as you said that, I can think of every Big interview there ever was. Like, I could think of the MTV interviews with him and Puff where he's talking about Pac getting shot. The SUV one, the Rhyme and Reason interview with him and his mom, the Rhapsody one,
and then the 94.9, which
and like that, that's the one in San Francisco, where he's standing up talking.
Radio interview he ever did, because that's the, you feel like you would see more of those, but that's the only one we ever see.
So, here's a question y'all might know. So, the famous freestyle where Big and Pac are sitting down. Was that an interview or was that just them freestyling?
That's a good question. Cause there is,
well, there's cameras. Yeah, there's so
cameras of an interview, but I'm not sure.
I feel like it's
an interview.
I feel like it's a Pac interview. Cause I feel like Pac says, yo, this is my man, the Notorious B.I.G., right? Like, that's, he's introducing Pac to. So I feel like it's a Pac. I don't know for what though.
Yeah. Cause Big performed that same night. And Pac performed.
Was that the one at the Garden?
He performed Party and Bullshit. I don't know if
Okay. Got you.
Yeah. But I always wondered, was that an interview? Because, I mean, Big was out. Or he was getting ready to be out. Like, people knew who he was, you know? But, yeah, like you said, he's...
Yeah, Pac, but that wasn't ready to die, Big.
It felt like it was a Pac bringing him along.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Which I think everyone knows, like, Pac did that. Like, Pac put him on stage and did all of that. Party and Bullshit was Who's the Man, I think, was the Who's the Man soundtrack.
Underrated movie, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's great. I'm saying it's underrated. Abacadabra.
And Love of Dr. Dre.
Love and Dr. Dre.
Busta Rhymes cameo.
Real quick before we leave Ready to Die, or excuse me, Life After Death. We kind of talked about this before. Want to get your take on it, Damien. Is one of the things that makes this album so phenomenal in the eyes of a lot of people is Big's ability to adapt on a numerous different songs. Like, numerous. Like, he'll do the song with the R&B artist that shall remain nameless. He'll do I Love the Dough and kind of have a different.
How do y'all feel about that record?
I Love the Dough?
Them boys is getting after it.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know now. Like,
no.
I used to see. I mean, Brooklyn's Finest is a classic, but
yep.
I Love the Dough.
I feel like I Love the Dough gets unfairly criticized.
I like I Love the Dough.
I like so it, do I. But I don't love it. Yeah. Though I'll be honest, I don't love it.
But that
I love the record. I can't even lie. I don't know that. That's maybe it's not hard enough for people. But it gets a bad rap, and it bothers me because I love the record.
See, to me, it's like, damn, if I could compare it, it's like when Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder did those collaboration songs. And
that's fine, because I love that record too.
I love those too, but they're still underwhelming though. Like, it's like the two of them, you know, y'all couldn't have come up with a better song than Just Good Friends.
Just Friends is fire. You've been hanging out with Spike Lee too much, man.
Spike loves, what are you talking about?
Because with Spike, they did a whole section in that Bad 25 about how Just Good Friends was like
Quincy
the worst.
Quincy Jones said that. He said, y'all couldn't have come up with something better
Quincy
than this.
Quincy out of pocket.
But I Love the Dough. I mean, it's a... Like, I don't want to say it's a J-type song, but I mean, it was a little different. It was more, it sounded a little more Reasonable Doubt. I'm on a yacht type deal.
Definitely.
You got Notorious Thugs, obviously. Going Back to Cali was a little bit of a different feel.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Let me stop you right there, Kenny. We're not just going to gloss over Notorious Thugs. And I want to direct this back to you, Damien, with all this recent Bone Thugs and Harmony hate. Let's just talk about how brilliant a song Notorious Thugs is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? Starting with Big's untimely flow that he could match that East 1999 sound.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like, you gotta give him some. You gotta give him some more credit than that.
Some people would say Big didn't say this, but some people will say that's when they felt Big was the greatest.
When he did that.
Hold on, man.
When he did it.
Yeah, you know why? Because he did it better than they did. That's why.
I don't.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with Bone Thugs and Harmony. They're fine. It's not my vibe.
I'm just giving you a hard time about
it. I have an edit. I have an edit of the song that ends after the first verse. And if I'm putting a playlist together, I'm putting the version that ends after the first verse on the playlist.
Look, to be honest with you, that version of that song probably sells more records than those.
See,
I wouldn't argue.
I don't know if I know anybody that says I played a song all the way through more than I stop just it after big.
So like quick, Armed and Dangerous, Ain't Too Many Can Bang With Us, Straight Up, We Know Angel Dust, Label Us Notorious. Give me one line from the other verses.
Better red, red, rum, 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 rum.
7, 8, 10, 10, 10. And sneaky, the best part of that is so-called beef with you know who. Fucked a few female stars or two. Like that's one thing I loved about Big is, I'll acknowledge it, but I ain't gonna say it.
Right. Yeah. You know that I know.
Yeah. I'm gonna acknowledge it, but I ain't gonna say it.
Just know that I know.
Yeah. Y'all got anything else on Life After Death?
Yeah, I do, real quick, not to end on a somber note, but when I was going through the album, I did think about how prophetic the album was. And, you know, I know, like I said earlier, there was a trilogy plan. It was, you know, the three. But some of the darkness, some of the themes of the album, even the cover art, even the whole Hitchcock photo shoot in, you know, the graveyard and the hearse and all of that.
And shout out to Apple, who did the re-release with the animated. It's a moving album cover.
Mm.
And it has like the bird like flocking. It looks amazing.
Mm. I think, you know, oftentimes artists, you know, they sort of prophesize the future, like they can see the future. And I wonder, like, all of the big paranoia, like him saying he was scared and waking up feeling like people were really going to kill him, and the threats on his life. Yeah. Like, did he really feel something coming? You know, because we know Pac felt something coming. But I often wonder, you know, listening, even you nobody till somebody kills you, like records like that, that really get dark and morbid. I'm like, did Big sense something was coming? You know
what's kind of sad about that too? And I don't want this to come off as like Pac deserved it. Obviously, clearly, he did not deserve anything that happened to him in his untimely death. But I feel like Pac was prophesizing that way because he was moving that way.
Yeah.
He was moving a certain way that, and with a certain people where if you mess around that way enough, it's going to catch up to you.
Yeah.
Big wasn't moving like that. Like, Big was, he was just enjoying his lifestyle, enjoying his money, and he wasn't moving that way.
Right.
And for him to be that paranoid of, you know, what could come is really sad, to be honest with you. Because he was like, I'm in this situation that it feels like I can't get out of, even though I'm not doing anything to perpetuate it.
Right.
And that's a little upsetting.
Yeah.
If they had caught Big's killer like they did Nipsey's, would his story be any different?
Would Big's story be?
Yeah. Or Pac. Or you know, because I think how much, like, there's so much extra stuff that goes into these two stories, right? The fact that they're linked.
I've seen every doc in USA TV.
Right. Unsolved Mysteries. Right. You know, every movie from every different angle. The fact that these two guys are so linked together. And part of the story is their death. Part of the story of their death is they're both unsolved. One was murdered on the Strip in Las Vegas. The other was murdered in Los Angeles, and no one got anything. And all of the lawsuits and the LAPD and the article, all of that stuff just adds more and more to these stories. And for me, it elevates those guys to an even greater level because it starts falling into the categories of you start to get those. And this is where you read too much or see too much and you start losing the ability to decipher what's real and what's fake. But most people, Martin was killed, right? Like Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated for a purpose. Like there was a reason that he was murdered.
Today's the anniversary of that too.
And you listen to that stuff. You listen to the stuff with Pac and Big and you start to finally say, oh man, is this the same thing? Like maybe they weren't assassinated, but maybe they saw no reason to find out who did it. Mm. And I think it's lifted both of them up in their post-life. It's part of the reason those two names are going to live. Their death is part of the reason that they're going to live forever.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it definitely adds to the lure without question. Does their legacy change? Does their stature, who they are, does it change if we find the killers? I personally don't think so, because I think the lifting up of the two of them is more in a negative light, you know what I mean, than anything. Because like you said, all the documentaries, all the movies, books, et cetera, like it's like there is money to be made in the mystery of who killed Big and Pac. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's almost like exploitive at this point, because it's clear there wasn't an effort to find out who did it. There's a lot of speculation, but nobody knows for sure. And yeah, sure, that does, make them even more mythical, in stature. But if the killers were, found and apprehended, I don't think it changes, because Nipsey Hussle, I think he's just going to continue to ascend and be larger than life as time goes on, much like Big and Pac.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's a great, question to pose.
It is. I think at this point in time, it doesn't have any effect. Maybe if it happened within 5 years of Big's death, maybe it does, take a certain effect. But now, at this point in time, we're 25, 26 years away. I don't think it has much effect. And the ironic thing about it, we don't know. But like I said, I've watched all this stuff. It seems like the killing of Tupac was completely unrelated from music. Sound like it's some gang stuff. And it was Pac moving a certain way with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I want to be careful, but that's not as romantic as what's been put out there. It's like, yo, this beef is just, music in the East Coast, West Coast. Like, it's unfortunate. It was like some street shit that, like I said, he was moving some type of way. Big situation, in my opinion, had a lot to do. It was a little bit of retaliation. And I think if you pull back enough layers with the Big thing, I do believe there were cops involved.
Yeah.
Was the LAPD involved? I'm not saying that, but cops who had different ties to other stuff
definitely
were involved, got hyped up in this whole thing and looked to retaliate. And that's something that maybe if there was a little more light on Pac's killer early and like that story early, maybe we could have avoided what happened with Big, because I do feel like Big's situation was unjust retaliation to Pac, and he had absolutely nothing to do with Pac's death.
I was at the Peterson Automotive Museum, both of you know that, recently, and there was a moment we were walking in where we took some pictures and going to walk in, and I like stopped and I kind of like did that look around like, oh, okay, this is where the truck pulled out. This is where the dude in the Nation of Islam outfit walked by. Like the putting all of this stuff together, the car goes over here to the stoplight, makes that turn. Here comes the other car and it's over.
Damn.
It's over.
Those things are always tripping.
Yeah.
Like it's always tripping.
It's
like akin to, when you walk down that alley over by the Marathon store, and it's like, this is where this dude walked back. Like you see, okay, this is where the car was waiting.
Mm-hmm.
He walked through this alley, came around. Like that's always.
I'm mad I didn't go down there before they closed that down. Man.
Yeah, the there's the video that picks up Big being killed.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it just came out.
Yeah. And yeah. It's like right across the street from that entrance. And I'm just looking at all this, like, oh, this is wild. Yeah, like, man, this is crazy. We appreciate you so much for being with us. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't yet. If you have the ability to leave a review, if you think this show's worth 5 stars, man, leave it. Send us your thoughts. You can always take part in the conversation as well. At Dealing with KC, at IMK Diddy, at Damian Barling, at The Dope Ones on Twitter. Instagram's a great way to connect with us. We're all over these social media platforms. But most of all, we appreciate you downloading and listening. And we'll hope you'll be back here next week on Corners of the Culture.
Follow. Peace.